Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Ki Tiseh. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Ki Tiseh. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha, Parshat Ki Tiseh, has dozens and dozens of laws. It opens with laws dealing with war, and I wanted to focus on the first of these, a fascinating law known as Eshet Yifat Tawar, or in English, the beautiful captive woman. Let's read the verses inside. Ki tetze la milchama oleivecha, unitano Hashem lokecha biyadecha v'shavita shivyo. If you go to war against your enemy and God gives your enemy into your hands and you take captives, v'ra'ita b'shivya Eshet Yifat Tawar, and amongst the captives, you see a beautiful woman, v'chashaktaba, and you desire her, v'lakachta lecha l'isha, and you take her for you as a wife. V'heveita el toch beitecha, you shall take her into your home, v'gilcha et rosha, and she shall shave her head, v'asta et tziperna, and she shall, quote-unquote, do her nails, v'hasira et simlat shivya me'aleha, and she shall take off the clothing of her captivity, V'yashva b'veitecha, and she shall sit in your house, u'bachta et avia ve'edima yerach yamim, and for a month she shall cry for her mother and father. V'achar kein tavo eleha, and afterward only shall you come to her, meaning can you have relations, u'va'alta v'hayta lecha l'isha, and she shall be for you a wife. This short little passage raises tons of questions. To begin with, why in the world is this person allowed to take a captive woman, presumably someone who's not Jewish, as a wife? Second, how are we to understand all of the specific laws that we are told in these verses that the person has to do before he can actually live with her as a wife? What's the purpose of the shaving of the head, of the doing of the nails, of her changing her clothing, crying over her parents? In addition, how do we understand each of these things to begin with? What does each signify, symbolize? Was shaving of the head considered something that would make you beautiful or something that would make you ugly? I think in today's world, we tend to think of shaving of the head as being something that would make you unaesthetic. People tend to take pride in their hair, and shaving it would be something that means that you're trying to make yourself not as beautiful as you once were. At the same time, different cultures are different. We know, for example, from Tanakh that before Yosef was taken out of prison and about to be presented to the king, the first thing they do is to shave his head. Obviously, in Egypt at the time, shaving your head was what was considered presentable. An unshaven head was not. So how do we know in our case, is shaving for the positive or for the negative? Similarly, Vasita et Tziperneha, she shall do her nails. What does it mean to do your nails? Does that mean to grow them? Does that mean to trim them? Does that mean to paint them? The changing of the clothing. She was wearing captivity clothing. What exactly is captivity clothing? Is that clothing that you wore when you were taken captive, that you were given by your captors? Is that clothing that you happen to have been wearing that day? Why is she taking them off? And finally, the crying over her parents. Is this just simple mourning because they might have died in battle? What if they're alive? Does she still have to cry over her parents? How do we understand all of these different aspects of the law? What do they amount to? Are they symbolic? Are they with some ulterior motive in getting a person to feel a certain way? Are they aimed at the captor or at the captive? We're going to look at a selection of about four different approaches to these questions, each of which read the laws in very different ways and come to very different conclusions as to the purpose of this entire issue. We'll start with Rashi. V'lakachta lecha l'isha. Lo dibra tara ela kineged yetzer hara. Rashi tells us that this law is one of those laws that's a concession to our yetzer hara, to our evil inclination. This is not an ideal. This is not something that the Torah wants. It's something that the Torah is giving into. It knows that sometimes a man in war, when he sees a beautiful woman, will fall for her. And the Torah is conceding to his evil inclination, telling us, "She'im ein hakadosh baruch hu matira yisa ena bisur," knowing if God didn't allow it, this person is going to do it anyway. So better that God allows it and gives it a certain type of a framework and controls the man's actions than the person just do it, bi'isur, perhaps in the more dangerous way. So he tells us, what does Tanakh do to control the person's actions? If this person is just doing his action out of desire, how is Tanakh trying to go and make this into a better scenario? So he tells us, v'asta tziparneha. What does it mean that she should do her nails? Tigadlim. Rashi understands the doing of the nails not as trimming of the nails or painting of the nails, but rather let them grow. Kidei shetitna ve'al. And he says, and this growth is to make her ugly. V'hasirat simat shivya. Lefi shehem na'im. Similarly, he says, why does she take off her captive clothing? Because her captive clothing were actually beautiful. Where does he get that from? Shehagoyim bin nevoteya mitkashtot b'melchama. The goyim, their daughters, would decorate themselves in war. B'shvil lahaznot achirim imahem. In order to go and prostitute others with them. Rashi is assuming, and perhaps this is based on the story that we read at the end of Sefer B'midbar with the Midianite women, who went and made themselves beautiful so that the Israelites would fall for them, that in general, perhaps, non-Jewish women in war would actually beautify themselves. And that's why the person has to go and take off her beautiful clothing, and the assumption that Rashi is suggesting, and put on less beautiful clothing. Once again, the idea is to make her less beautiful, less desirable. V'yashva b'veitecha, so why does she have to sit in your house? She has to sit and live with you. Every time you go in, you're going to bump into her. Every time you go out, you're going to bump into her. And why is this? So that you'll see her this entire month when she doesn't look beautiful, when she's not wearing her beautiful clothing, when her hands are not trimmed beautifully, when her head is shaven, and she doesn't look at all desirable. Why? Because we want her to become disgraceful in his eyes. Why does she cry for her parents? Kol kach lama, kedei shetehei ba Yisrael smecha, v'zo atziva, ba Yisrael mitkashetet, v'zo mitnavelet. Why does she have to cry? So that whenever the man who took her sees her, he compares her to his Israelite wife, who's happy and smiling, and sees this woman who's crying and tearful and mourning and not looking particularly beautiful. He says, what's the ultimate purpose? That you should come to hate her. So Rashi is actually basing himself off of Chazal, and this entire approach is suggesting the taking of a captive woman is not an ideal situation. We don't really want a person to go and see someone who happens to be beautiful in war, desire her and take her for a wife. So what do? We say before you're allowed to really take her, she has to stay with you for a month and you have to see her not in her most desirable state, but rather in her least desirable state, as she is not dressed beautifully, as she does not look kempt, and as she's crying and upset. Thus, we're going to ensure that someone doesn't just marry her out of a moment's passion and desire. This is Tanakh's way of ensuring that if after the month the person still wants her, it's for good reason. It's not because he just fell for her. And that one moment of weakness inside the battlefield when you're all tense and you're worried and you end up falling for a woman because she's beautiful doesn't end up ruining the rest of your life. So Rashi suggests every single aspect of this law comes to de-beautify, to make this woman not desirable, so that you don't fall for her and that one minute of weakness doesn't turn into a life of misery. If after a month seeing her in this undesirable state, you still want her, fine. But then there's a real desire there, not just based on outside looks and beauty. Not everyone agrees with Rashi, partially because they don't understand all the individual laws in the same way, partially perhaps because they don't view the Torah as giving in to our desires and want to read this in a slightly different way. Rav Yosef Bechor Shor suggests that all the actions have something else in common. Not to make the woman less beautiful, but rather, kedei letaher atzma. All of the different actions, the shaving, the doing of the nails, the changing of the clothing, all have this common denominator that they're meant to purify the woman. Purify her from what? Mishikutz v'nivu gayuta, mavira se'ar, v'tziparneha, u'bigadim. She's being purified from her non-Jewish state. According to Rav Yosef Bechor Shor, this woman was not Jewish. When she gets married, she's going to be forced to convert. Part of that process is a process of tahara, of purification. And in so doing, she has to shave and she has to cut her nails and she has to change her clothing. How does he understand the crying? Ubachta lav mitzvahi. He says that last condition that she should cry over her parents, that's not a mitzvah, it's not a commandment. Elamistama vadai tivka. Rather, that's just telling us what will probably happen. If she's been taken captive and her parents have been killed, she's likely going to cry over them. A third approach is taken by Ramban. He says, no, these things don't have to do with beauty. These things don't have to do with purification. But rather, all of these things are signs of mourning. L'kach ani omer ki kol eila mishpatei avelut. He says, each of these things are symbolic. They represent mourning. The shaving of the head, one might ask, how is that mourning? So there are several places in Tanakh, even though today we dafka say that one of the things that one person does when they're mourning is that they don't cut their hair. One of the reasons that we don't cut our hair is because in the ancient Near East as a whole, one thing that you did as a sign of mourning was to tear out your hair. So the shaving of the hair is a general, perhaps, sign of mourning. Similarly, perhaps, the doing of the nails. And changing of clothing, you take off your clothes, you put on clothes of mourning. Ramban brings a few proof texts just to point this out. He says, V'tzivashe tigalach rosha kederach avilut. She's told to go and shave her hair like the way of mourning. As we see in several psukim, V'yagezet rosha. In Eov, we're told that he sheared his head as a sign of mourning. V'chein gizin ezrech in Yirmiyahu, when it tells us that we should go and mourn, it tells us you should cut off your nazir, the crown of your head, your hair. V'chein kitzitzatza tzipranayim, he reads the doing of the nails as a cutting of the nails. And he says the cutting of the nails similarly is a sign of avelut. Kigiluach harosh, drawing a parallel to the shaving of the head. If cutting your hair is a sign of mourning, cutting your nails should be too. V'heisira et simlat shivya, klomar tilbash bigdei evel, taking off her captive clothing so that she can change into clothing of mourning. V'yashva b'veitecha, sitting in your house, ka'almana v'lo titzei chutz klal, just like one who is a mourner or one who is a widow stays in the house, so too she should stay in the house. V'chol zeh ta'aseh yerech yamim, she should do this for a month, kikein derech avilim, because that's the way of mourning, a month worth of mourning. Ramban doesn't stop there. He doesn't say this is just mourning, but he says this is mourning for a purpose. What's the mourning for a purpose? She'ya'akor shem avodah zarah mipiha umidiba. He says the purpose of this mourning isn't really a mourning over her parents, but it's a mourning over an entire lifestyle. This person is about to go and become Jewish. We're forcing her to become Jewish. She hasn't come to this decision by herself after learning about Judaism and deciding that she wants to be Jewish. She's being forced to become Jewish because this person wants to marry her. And so we give her a month to basically mourn her past, to mourn her old gods and to mourn her old family and everything that she's leaving behind so that she can then come into Judaism fresh and happy to be Jewish. She needs that month to sort of say goodbye before she can embrace Judaism in any real way. He tells us, if she does this, v'ne'akar kitzatim liba avodah zarah, shalav va'ama u'molaretza, ki nichama alehim. If she does this, then the avodah zarah will be uprooted from her heart because she's already had some comfort over it. Having that month to separate herself allows her to transform from someone who had been an Oved Avodah Zarah to someone who can now become Jewish. He points out, though, Aval im ratzta lehitgayer b'chefetz nafsha b'veitin, had she wanted of her own desire to convert in Beit Din, harehi muter miyad gam lo gam laviv ulachiv, then she would have been permitted to him right away. According to Ramban, this entire month worth of actions is only necessary if she didn't by herself desire to convert. Had she by herself desired to convert, though, this would not have been a problem or a necessity at all. She could just go and convert right away, and immediately, the next day, they can go and have their wedding or whatever. I wanted to move on to one last approach. This is approach taken by the Ho'il Moshe. He's a student of Shadal, an Italian commentator in the late 1800s. He reads our parsha not from the perspective of the captor, of the person who's going to take her, but rather from the perspective of the captive. Like Ramban, focusing on the woman herself, he too does this, but a much more positive way. He starts by telling us, V'gilchad Rosha, in anu yodim mishpat hanashim bimei Moshe, he says, we don't really totally know the ways of women in the time of Moshe when they would want to go and get married. And that's the reason that we can't totally understand our parsha. But, nir'eh barur, shemitzvat v'sirat simlat shivya, rotze lomar, shelo teshev b'bayit kishivcha b'li tachlif b'gadim. He says, but at least some things seem to be clear. The mitzvah that she has to go and take off her captive clothing, he says, means what? That she shouldn't be sitting in this house like a servant without any changes of clothing. Ubayoma hu lo nitkashta limtzochin b'inei tzareh, aval hayta do'eget l'nefesh krovah. In contrast to Rashi, he says, and chances are, the day that she was taken captive, she wasn't wearing very beautiful clothing. She wasn't trying to go and entice the enemy, but rather she was sitting there worried about her family and all of those that were close to her. And very likely was wearing one of her uglier clothing. Right? In war, we don't tend to go and put on makeup and look beautiful. Rather, we're all bloodied and stained and dirtied from trying to protect those close to us. And he says, so very likely, she was wearing tatters, ugly clothing, nothing beautiful on the day that she happened to be taken captive. And therefore, now when she goes and moves into his house, she's supposed to put on beautiful clothing, nice clothing, not sit there as if she's just a servant. Va'ish terem bo'o aleha bi'arishana. And the Ho'il Moshe continues and tells us, and of the person, before he comes and has his first set of relations with her, tzarich sheyedaber aliba, he should go and talk to her heart, v'yavtichana shekishe'eshet cheko tiyalo, v'lo kishivcha. He should talk to her and promise her and tell her, you're going to be a real wife to me, not a servant. V'imkein gam giluach harosh v'asiyat ha-tzipoin lul nivul te'aseh. And he says, and therefore it seems likely that the shaving of the head, the doing of the nails, their purpose is not to make her ugly. He says, but rather, like the ways of the rest of the woman right before they get married. Someone goes and makes himself beautiful. Like any bride, the day before her wedding, she goes and beautifies herself. So too, this woman is changing her clothing, doing her nails, doing her hair. And he says, just like any woman sits in the house of her father for a couple of days or a week or so while she's engaged, before she's married, and in that time she's a little worried, She's a little bit of concern. Oh, what will happen? I'm leaving my family. I'm going to a new person. I'm going to a stranger. So too this woman has a month to cry. Not because she's in mourning, but like any woman who's about to get married, is a little scared. She's a little bit of worried, not sure where she's going. Because she's going to miss her family. So she cries for her family. But after she satisfied herself with these tears, then she'll come around and desire the rest of her life with her husband. Then, only then can he come to her. So Ha'il Moshe tells us, V'chol zeh limnoa zima b'bnei Yisrael. He says, all of this is coming to ensure that we don't go and just take a captive woman, l'shem znut, for prostitution, out of wrong motives. We don't go and take a woman and, because of our one-minute desire, come and treat her like a maidservant for the rest of her life and give her secondary status in our houses. But rather, he says, this whole set of laws is coming to teach us that when a woman is taken as a captive and taken as a wife by an Israelite man, she's taken as a wife in the full sense of that term. She's not to be treated as a maidservant. She's not to be go and flung around as if she's a nobody, but rather you're supposed to treat her exactly as you would anyone else that you might have taken in marriage. So interestingly, you have a Rashi and a Ha'il Moshe who to some extent are the exact opposites of each other. Rashi tells us the entire purpose is to make her ugly. The Ha'il Moshe says, no, the entire purpose is to make her beautiful, is to make her comfortable, is to make her desirable. But to some extent, their intent is the same. Rashi says, we're making her undesirable to ensure that you don't just take her for that minute's desire. That you don't just take her because you thought she was beautiful during that 1 minute in the war, but rather see if you still like her after a month. He suggests, chances are you won't. Great, then don't take her. Ha'il Moshe, though, says something very similar. If you're gonna take her, treat her as a wife. For both Rashi and the Ha'il Moshe, one of the things that the Torah is doing is reacting against the laws of other cultures in which people would take women in captivity and not treat them with any humanity whatsoever. Rashi says, if that's the case, make sure you don't take her. Ha'il Moshe says, if you're gonna take her, make sure you treat her as a wife. And so we have an entire spectrum of opinions. Rashi on one end, the Ha'il Moshe on the other, and in the middle are two ideas of perhaps relations that these laws relate to the laws of her having been a non-Jew, an idolatrous worshiper, and so that symbols of the actions that she has to do relate to a process of tahara, a process of purification, or a process of mourning, but both of which comes to move her away from that idolatry. So this short little passage, I think, raises many interesting questions that you can think about over Shabbat. One, to what extent do we make laws that are a concession to evil inclination? Two, how do we ensure when we do such a thing that we correct them as much as possible? How do we read different things in Tanakh? We don't really know what they meant in their times. Shaving, is that positive or is that negative? Doing of the nails, is that beautifying or is that making it ugly? Changing your clothing, what is the purpose? We've seen how so many different mefarshim, so many different commentators read into these things, such different things, from mourning to purification to beautification. How do you know how to read those types of things? And finally, how does Tanakh sometimes take a practice that might have been widespread, but ensure that we do it the right way? That if we take a captive woman, we make sure that we treat her not as a captive, but as a wife. And so I wish you a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Neema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.